you said before, calling evil, tearing off its mask. I mean, there, he said that social movements founded on even the most noble principles. And of course, we know that. I mean, with communism, let's say, or we could even say Zionism, that they have to be judged by their practical outcomes. Do they lead to justice, to kindness, or to executions behind the wall of prisons? So I wanted to ask you about that, because Elie Wiesel has always been seen as such a powerful moral force. And in your book, Witness, you explore these questions in such depth. And I think it's, you know, especially in our time right now, it is so important for us to interrogate these lessons and find our moral compass. And yet, he did not seem to extend the same kind of compassion to the Palestinians. You know, he said at one point that his loyalty to his people, to Israel, comes first and prevented him from saying anything critical of Israel. And yet, as we've seen, there has been, you know, Zionism was founded on some pretty noble principles, but has now seems to have turned to a much more difficult moral stance. And I wonder if you could talk about that and you know, how some of sometimes our heroes themselves may fall short.
Sure. First, the process of interrogating any social movement is really critical, no matter how noble. And one of the things that Elie Wiesel taught about the 20th century is that both communism and fascism, and even National Socialism, started with the language of exalted visions for humanity, but of course ended up with terrible oppression. And so we can't take that for granted, even in our own social movements, even in our most progressive, in the strict sense, the most visionary progressive movements that we are involved with or that we create or help create or support. We need to ask those hard questions about the secondary or unintended consequences of some of our actions. And we even need to do that, by the way, with sacred text. And that's something that we spent a lot of time doing in the classroom with Elie Wiesel, was interrogating sacred text and the Bible with those kinds of questions. And that's a powerful thing when you're a believer or have some loyalty to a sacred text, to say, well, did God fall short in this story? Or, for example, Elie Wiesel said, the book of Joshua has no poetry in it. And the reason is that it's a book about conquest, the conquest of the land of Israel by the Israelites. And when there's a story about conquest, you can't have song and poetry in the same place. So that was the kind of process that he wanted us all to engage with. And the subject of Zionism specifically, Elie Wiesel considered himself a Zionist, and in fact, his read of the situation in the Middle East and in Israel and with the Palestinians was something he spent a lot of time dealing with, not only in public ways, but in private conversations with heads of state in Israel and elsewhere. And he was involved in many of the behind-the-scenes conversations about the Oslo Accords and other attempts later to make peace. He was close with Shimon Peres and others who were the architects of those attempts. And his honest assessment was that there are many challenges and issues here, but the main responsibility lies not with the Palestinian people, but with the Palestinian leadership. And that was his assessment based on his on-the-ground experiences there and also his conversations with heads of state. But of course, he did say that his loyalty to Israel prevented him from making public statements of critique, and he saved those critiques or those challenging questions for his private conversations with prime ministers, with various prime ministers throughout Israel's history. He was close with prime ministers from way back, first as a journalist at the UN. And he had many tough conversations with heads of state in Israel about these issues. But he didn't want to do that publicly because he felt that the Jewish state is subject to so much attack and double standard in the media that he felt like it was not a productive thing to do. And that was where his loyalty came into play. You can agree or disagree with that move, but that's really where he expressed his sense of personal loyalty. And he said that to me in private conversations. He said, when I go to Israel and I visit with Prime Minister X, at the time it was, I think it was Sharon, but I'm not sure. He said, that's where I bring all of my questions and my challenges. But publicly, I do something very different because of the climate in which we're living. And this came up in class only a couple of times, but students asked him about Zionism specifically. And he considered Zionism to be, in general, with the challenges and with the critiques, so far a generally successful social movement where you can have an Arab judge on the Supreme Court and generals in the army and so on, not without its flaws, but certainly an honest attempt to create a just society, as well as a society that could be a safe haven for Jews. The larger tension here, I think, which he lived with all the time and he spoke about very often, is the tension between loyalty to any particular family, tribe, tradition, and loyalty to humanity as a whole. And how can you not give up on the universal when you're part of a particular group? And on the other hand, how can you not betray your family and the particular group that you're a part of in the face of your universal commitments? And that's really, starting with Knight and his early work, that's what he tried to do, was to use that and yet paradoxical kind of thinking to say that the more you're connected to your particular tradition, the better a job you're going to do on behalf of all of humanity. And the more connected I am, he said, to my experience of the Holocaust, the more I can work on behalf of all human beings anywhere, in Cambodia, Yugoslavia, South America, South Africa, Darfur, Rwanda, and so on, to make sure that it never happens again to anyone else.